On the second anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, organizers and residents of New Orleans are demanding rights for displaced residents. A two-day Bring Our People Home event, organized by the New Orleans Survivor Council, as well as other organizations, will call for a government restoration of public housing so that many families can finally return home. The commemorative event is just one sign of many that New Orleans residents and Katrina victims feel that the pace of rebuilding the Gulf Coast is too slow. Critics of recovery efforts assail the federal policies of the past 2 years as a reason why many Katrina survivors have not been able to return to their homes and to their lives. In the Lower Ninth Ward District, hit hard by the hurricane, residents and activists are still struggling to rebuild, and victims are still seeking a way to come back. Only 7% of the neighborhood's former residents have made their way back. Hundreds of homes, more so than in any other part of the city, were slated to be demolished in the neighborhood before New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin was forced to call for a moratorium. Joining us to talk about where NOLA is at 2 years after Katrina is Jeffrey Buchanan, co-author of the report, Where Did the Katrina Money Go?, a report by the Institute for Southern Studies, and Daryl Malik Riley, environmental justice organizer for the Sierra Club. Welcome.
Welcome.
So, Jeffrey, I actually wanted to start with you. Can you talk a little bit about how much money was allotted for rebuilding in the Gulf and how much money has been spent?
Well, the White House likes to say that they sent a check for $114 billion to the region to rebuild. Through our research, we found that this is patently false. There's only about $35 billion available for actual rebuilding programs in the Gulf Coast. About two-thirds of the money that the White House likes to cite was actually for the emergency response. So that's things like the Coast Guard, we're clearing out some of the debris, temporary emergency housing. That's made up the bounty of the federal response to date. Actual rebuilding, we found, like I said, $35 billion, but only 42% of that, less than 42% of that, has actually been spent. So there's still money to be spent, but even the money available is not enough to cover the devastation.
And what are your initial estimates about how much money would be needed if we were talking about a full recovery?
Well, you really have to look, community by community, but just to kind of give perspective, in Louisiana alone, they calculated that they had taken on about $100 billion worth of damage from Katrina. Within that, about $25 billion was to public infrastructure. To date, there's only about $3.6 billion available from the federal government Gulf Coast-wide to rebuild public infrastructure. And that has to be spread across five different states that were hit by the 2005 hurricanes. So just in public infrastructure, we're seeing that there's going to need to be a significant federal investment to really bring things back up to where they were, which, we should really be looking towards what's a 21st century infrastructure, not just rebuilding what was. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have been kind of organizing around.
Well, and Daryl, I want to go to you. I feel like there's actually kind of two groups of NOLA residents, and their struggles are very different and obviously connected.
Right.
I think that there's NOLA folks who are on the ground in New Orleans struggling to kind of make do and get back their lives, and then there's folks trying to return to NOLA. And I wanted to get your sense, like, what really characterizes their struggles, and what do you see as some of the main barriers towards them coming back and being able to rebuild fully?
Well, I think, the main barriers is the money has never got to Louisiana. I'm working with residents in Lower Ninth Ward in the Holy Cross neighborhood, and it's real hard. Many folks got a free ride, a free bus ride, a forced bus ride in some cases to someplace else. And there's no free money to bring them back. There's no return ticket. And if they return, there's no housing right now. And that's one of the big problems, a lack of affordable housing. And what we're seeing in the Holy Cross neighborhood is people coming back, but it's on an individual case-by-case basis that have the resources to come back or know somebody or, it's a very much an individual struggle. The federal dollars are just almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm. And if you come back, so it sounds like there isn't housing. Like, has there been environmental cleanup in the area, particularly like in the Ninth Ward? Has there been environmental cleanup to make the neighborhood safer?
Well, we've done some testing. Our Natural Resource Defense Council has done some soil testing. The neighborhoods were in the Holy Cross neighborhood, we think, is pretty clean as far as soil contamination. Most of the mold is gone. So, and it's one of the higher areas in town that if the federal government would have lived up to its promise and had the levees in place, it wouldn't have flooded. So I think that's one of the big things is, from our perspective, all the flooding in New Orleans and St. Bernard Parish was caused by failed engineering by the Corps of Engineers. And we feel that the federal government should make everybody 100% back to where they were before the storm, and we're seeing pennies on the dollar, if that.
I want to remind our listeners on the phone, that was Darrell Malik Riley, environmental justice organizer for the Sierra Club. Also joining us is Jeffrey Buchanan, co-author of the report, Where Did the Katrina Money Go? So, Jeffrey, I wanted to go back to you. What's your biggest sense of where the battle for accountability is regarding this money, and also to support NOLA residents to really get back and be able to create their lives in a real way?
I think Darrell was really hitting it on the head, that the federal policy has not supported the human right to return home. If you look at international human rights law, after a disaster, especially a disaster caused by a federal government that displaces a large amount of people, those displaced people have a human right to be able to return and to participate in the rebuilding process. And we really have not seen that. We've seen very much a hands-off attitude from the federal government of saying that they're going to write the check and send it down to the region, while these struggling local governments and state governments that are, you know, rebuilding neighborhoods and communities from the ground up have not been able to, you know, get the job done as quickly as a strong, robust federal effort would have happened. We're looking, you know, really hoping that we can see a renewed federal effort, you know, if not in this presidency, definitely in the, you know, we're asking among the 2008 candidates to really look at how little has been invested and how to make sure that we, you know, give a proper investment and get it there quickly and get it done efficiently. Really trying to rebuild the housing, the schools, the healthcare system, you know, the flood protection, the things that are really necessary for people to come home.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I found really interesting is that there was a lot of emphasis in terms of individuals looting right after Katrina, but there wasn't really a lot of stories that looked at the institutional looting that really came from the enormous amount of corruption that happened at state and local and federal levels around money that could have protected the region but then was, you know, taken off in terms of corruption or money towards the war. And I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you in terms of trying to keep our eye on the money is really about in terms of, like, knowing that there was corruption in these agencies beforehand, how can there even really be trust afterwards to know that they're going to be able to use this rebuilding money well? Because from what I've seen in terms of the numbers, even, like, what's been rebuilt, there isn't, like, a conversation about what gets the priority in terms of money.
No, I guess, you know, there is, you know, on a lot of people, there is a lot of feeling that there has been money that's been misused. But, I mean, it is possible for the federal government to carry out a new investment. You look back to the New Deal, you look back to a program like the WPA, and just how little fraud there was in that kind of program where the federal government was carrying out this large-scale kind of federal works program. It is possible. We can't expect it of our government. You know, it's just going to require Congress or the next president to really put into place what a robust effort's going to look like and how to make sure that it's held accountable and we don't have folks like the Shaw Group, like Halliburton, like all these federal contractors that got their hands on this initial money in these contracts, you know, abusing the people's money and not focusing on helping families return home and restore their communities.
Do you have a number, Jeffrey, on, like, how much money went into those private contracts?
Well, Congress actually did some investigation, and they found about $9 billion in contracts that had either had fraud, misuse. This was through Representative Henry Waxman's Committee on Oversight. Mm-hmm. They found, you know, almost $9 billion. So that's almost a tenth of the money, you know, that had gone into the system, that there had been fraud or some kind of, you know, misconduct, which, you know, really is in the aftermath of the storm, when the first big emergency response contracts were given out. It was kind of a Wild West bonanza of misspending and misuse, and not a real focus on, you know, these displaced families and these communities that really needed to, you know, have this money used in a proper way.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to go to you, Daryl. When we talk now of NOLA individuals, like where are they in terms of their finances? Where's like the federal money gone in terms of supporting them? And are they still receiving FEMA checks? Are those checks like coming on time?
It's real spotty, and it's very much, you know, each individual case is different. And what we're seeing is not a real strong support anyway. And, you know, the part of the problem has been that we've focused on they've gotten checks for FEMA trailers, but the FEMA trailers have high levels of formaldehyde in them. And I don't know, you know, it's not the kind of place where we want people to be living. So it's just the whole federal response has been failed in our view. And I think one thing that we need to talk about in New Orleans, especially the Holy Cross, they've got a vision of how they want to come back. And they want to come back sustainable, green energy, solar panels, all these really far-thinking ideas, and this is being driven by the folks in the neighborhood. And I think that's part of the story that's not getting out.
Well, can you talk to us about what that vision for green rebuilding is, particularly in the context that, you know, we can't reverse, global climate change. And
right.
So, you know, New Orleans will be on the front lines for future hurricanes. So what does that model for green look like for you all?
Right. It looks a number of different things. One, we build in ways that are sustainable and, you know, we raise our house elevations. We reduce our carbon input. Solar panels, energy efficiency, a whole range of things. And then we have a very active program to restore the coastal wetlands. You know, one of the things that we're concerned about, the Corps keeps talking levees, levees, levees. We don't hear them talking coastal marsh restoration, cypress swamp, you know, rebuilding. So it's easier to write a check to put in concrete than it is to rebuild trees or replant trees.
And why would the restoration of the swamplands around that area bring protection to New Orleans? Because many of our listeners aren't in the area.
The whole South Louisiana has lost tremendous wetlands, but every mile of wetlands reduces storm surge 2 to 3 feet. And if it's cypress trees and cypress swamp, it helps reduce not only the storm surge but the wind because of just friction with the wind going through the trees. So it's really a natural barrier system that we need to reinstall, and it's mainly been taken apart because of oil and gas exploration over the many years.
Hmm. And can I ask also, Daryl, and knowing that there's been this kind of, you know, huge glut of money that's been supposedly allotted for recovery and very few dollars have actually drizzled down back to people in NOLA, what has been people's response and how they've been organizing around this?
A lot of angry people and, you know, trying to organize in political ways because we have to understand we might be able to get, and we usually do get, the Louisiana congressional delegation to support more money down here. But it's going to take congressmen from California, from Alaska, from Hawaii, from all across the country to make the political decision to spend the money in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast rather than someplace else.
Jeffrey, I want to go back to you. Now, you're also with the Institute for Southern Studies, and what was your hope in terms of the report, and how are you hoping that this report can influence some of the policy change that Daryl is talking about?
Well, definitely. I think the one thing that the Louisiana delegation has really come into, or when, you know, local officials within the state of Louisiana come up, or even Mayor Nagin, again and again in these hearings, we'll see that congressmen say, we sent you all this money, why hasn't there been more progress? And with the federal policy of, you know, saying that they've sent money and putting the onus on the local government, they've been able to use these manipulated numbers that don't really mean anything about rebuilding to kind of really stall out the process and to stall the process of actually thinking about a renewed investment. And we really wanted to just really set the tone and set the truth out there that there's only $35 billion available, and we're looking at a storm that did Gulf Coast-wide about $150 billion worth of damage. That was a study that came out of Marshall University. Potentially, this storm could be bigger than the three largest disasters our nation has ever seen combined, so bigger in financial cost than the September 11th attacks, than the Hurricane Andrew or the Northridge earthquake combined, all three of those in one. That was this one disaster. And there really has not been that outpouring of real rebuilding programs from the federal government. We wanted to restart that conversation and hopefully, you know, let people know what the truth is, how much money there is to rebuild. We're in the rebuilding phase. The emergency response is over with. Let's talk about rebuilding this region.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daryl, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the Bring Our People Home event that's happening, that's being organized by the New Orleans Survivor Council.
Yeah, it's happening over the weekend. They've been trying to bring folks, you know, back to New Orleans to try and bring the whole issue of the displacement of folks from New Orleans back on the public attention of the nation. And I think it's one thing that people don't understand or haven't really heard about lately, the fact that there's so many folks that aren't back home yet, and it's just outrageous. Here we are 2 years after the event, and we still have people living in, I don't know if all 50 states, but a number of states around the U.S., and they're not able to come home, and it's outrageous.
Mm. Well, I definitely hope that the event goes well, and I know that we will also be covering Katrina this entire week in honor and in the anniversary for justice, Katrina, 2 years later. But I want to thank you both for joining us. But before we leave, I want to be able to leave our listeners with websites where people can both look at the report and also follow the organizing, Daryl, that you're doing on the
right
ground. So, Jeffrey, can you leave us with the website where they can read your report?
You can see the report at www.southernstudies.org/GulfWatch.
Okay. That's southernstudies.org / what's the last bit?
Gulf Watch.
Okay. That was Jeffrey Buchanan, co-author of the report, Where Did the Katrina Money Go? A report by the Institute for Southern Studies. And Daryl, can you leave us information for where people can follow both the Bring Our People Home event as well as the ongoing environmental justice efforts in
the region? The main website that has a lot of information about Holy Cross is www.helpholycross.org, and that's sort of gives people an idea of all the great work that's been going on in that neighborhood.
Okay, that's www.helpholycross.org. Thank you both for joining us. All right, later in our show, subprime mortgages and the call for a moratorium and deaths on the Arizona-Mexico border. But up next, Radio Roots in this day in radical history. But first, we now turn to a report filed by Jason McKenzie of the North Gulfport Community Land Trust.
So who was that we said is building on the coast? Since Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast, casino and luxury condominium development has proliferated in the region. The city of Biloxi has intentions for major casino expansion. The Hard Rock Casino has just opened, and the Margaritaville Casino is currently in the process of acquiring land for its $700 million construction project. Luxury condominiums are under construction along the Mississippi coastline from Waveland to Ocean Springs. What we're finding in the development that's going on is that the folks that once lived here on the coastline and in other regions are just unable to afford to move back. Insurance prices are keeping them away from the area. And basically insurance is just, the prices are too high for people to be able to afford to insure their homes to get the flood insurance. And the only ones who can afford to build on these lands are then the larger developers, the casinos, and so forth. And then a lot of folks, since they're selling out and moving on, they're speculating, so land prices are up pretty high. So what we're finding is an economy that's striving towards being based entirely on tourism and the casino market, and what we suspect is that most of this coastline will be casinos and condominiums from one stretch to the other. And the other folks, the lower income people, will be forced to live in the outer line towns 30, 40 miles away and have to commute into town, thus also affecting their affordability.
There will be little affordable homes. That's the tragedy of the situation.
Reverend Harry Tart is a retired Methodist pastor and high school teacher from Gulfport, Mississippi. He served in the U.S. Army for 30 years. Though he will soon be celebrating his 99th birthday, he still goes to work every day at the Gulf Coast Community Action Agency. Reverend Tart says that with the current pace of development, low-income folks will be priced out of their neighborhoods.
The high-rise condominiums that we have going up are too costly for the average person. So we have that major problem of not having affordable houses in the area, and that is desperately needed.
Reverend Tart says that local government had its hands tied as the city's financial tax base was lost in the storm, thus making it dependent on offers from large-scale developers.
The local government had no resources when these businesses were destroyed, they lost their tax base. When the homes were destroyed, they lost their tax bases. So that was one reason why the local government just was at the mercy of the storm.
Reverend Tart also says that if it weren't for the volunteers, nonprofit organizations, and church groups, the coast of Mississippi would not be rebuilding.
Volunteers who come down have been a tremendous help to us. They've slept in churches and stayed here week after week, providing resources without pay. They've done all kinds of work, not only food, but also for clothing, also for repairing homes without charging. Religious organizations also, those are non-religious, have come down, and some of them are still down here. But they responded in a great way. I've never seen such a positive response on all over the country who come down here to help us with that. Without that kind of aid, we'd have been much worse off than what we are.
If the government does not step in and help coastal residents and nonprofit organizations, the face of the Mississippi Gulf Coast will change from one of family and community to one of high-rise condominium and casino. And Gulfport, as we know it, will be history. Preserving the African-American North Gulfport community from this type of development is our mission. Reporting with the North Gulfport Community Land Trust, I'm Jason McKenzie.